जननीं शारदां देवीं रामकृष्णं जगद्गुरुं पादपद्मे तयोः स्थित्वा प्रणमामि मुहुः. इट्स ए ग्रेट प्लेजर फॉर मी टू कम बैक हियर टू सी अवर डिवोटीज. And as I mentioned many times, I am so happy to meet them because always they come with fresh minds to me. The Swamis, any Swami, you know, a Swami means really a sannyasi, master. In Sanskrit, the word Swami means master. But respectfully, it is referred to, even a husband is also called a Swami. Conventionally. But a monk is called a sannyasi, a Swami. Swami means he who is master of himself. So, every sannyasin, like any other person in this world, has two duties. A student has some duties. Householder has specific duties. And similarly, a retired person has his own duties. I will speak about it in a small detail. And a monk has also his own duties. So first of all, a retired person. Hinduism divided life into four stages: student life and experiencing stage, experimental or experiencing stage, and semi-retirement and total detachment, four stages. And Hinduism specifically imposes a duty upon everyone. It is not a choice given. After some time, when the children are grown up and they stand on their own feet, then they will have to slowly withdraw from the external activities. It is not a life of laziness. Retirement is not a time for entertainment and spending more time in leisure. What it means is turning the mind back towards higher things. Antarmukhinatva, we call it. That is its purpose. The whole scheme of the Vedas, and Vedas are the foundational scriptures of Hinduism, so beautifully outlined the purpose of life and how to attain it. Every scripture has only one purpose in mind, every scripture. It is to lead every intelligent human being to his real nature. What is the goal of life? And goal of life can be only one thing. What is the goal of a seed? To become a plant, a tree. And what type of plant can it become? An apple seed can only become an apple plant. So it cannot become anything else. It is impossible for it to become anything else. So if a human being has to grow, he is like a seed. And he can only grow into his own true nature. Not what we think, but what is our true nature. According to Vedas, that our true nature is? How do we know what is our true nature? From where we come, from where we originate. For example, you know, a bubble. Where from does it originate? From water. Water. And where does it go back? Into water. So, an apple seed, from where does it come? from an apple tree. And therefore it has to grow into an apple tree only. That is the nature. So if that is true, then what is the nature of our true nature? From where? This most wonderful thing, the speculation is always, if we have come from something, we can only be of that nature. A wooden table, what is its nature? Wood. It cannot be. It's only, what is a table? What is a wooden table? A wooden table is a wooden piece of furniture. It is from the beginning to the end, nothing but wood. But then why don't we call it wood? Because it has a specific form, specific name, and specific utility. Nama, Rupa, and Prayojana or Uddeshya. That is what distinguishes it. A chair made out of wood has its own nature, shape, form, and name, and utility. You can't interchange them. You can't use a table as a chair and a chair as a table. Usually, in emergency cases, yes, you can use it. But usually, that's what distinguishes. But all through, what is its nature? It is only wood. So it came out of wood, it remains as wood, and again, when it loses its name, form, and natural utility, it only remains as wood. What is the lesson we derive from this? That the table is neither born nor destroyed. It's not born means what? It's wood has changed shape and we call it a table, a chair. And after some time that shape is lost. So nama and rupa are lost. And then what does it remain? Wood only. This truth has been so beautifully, succinctly presented in Taittiriya Upanishad. What is the reality? How do we know what's reality? So the instruction given is Etova imani bhutani jayante ena bhutani jivanti yat pravishanti abhisamvishanti iti. That's from where all these creatures are originated and how, by what do they live and unto which do they return in the end. If we can find that something from which it has come, from in which it lives and unto which it returns again, that is its reality. If we go on analyzing this way, what do we find? This whole universe, even from a physicist's point of view, scientific point of view, here is man, woman, child, a chair, and a sofa, a cushion, a computer, anything. These are all but nama and rupa, different names because of different forms. Ultimately, they have originated from there. I want you to give me the answer. You know it, the answer. Matter. You can say matter. The whole thing has come out of matter. As matter, we are all one. As name and form, we are all different. The only thing is, science doesn't recognize consciousness. It thinks that somewhere on the way, as epiphenomena, byproduct, somehow it joined. But that's unscientific because what is not originally there cannot somehow manifest itself. That's an impossibility. Anyway, we do not need to go into that discussion, but what the Vedas, our Hindu scriptures recognize, is that the whole, what we call Jagat universe, where from it has come? From Brahman. How does it live? In Brahman. And where does it return to? Unto Brahman. So what is the goal of life? to know this reality, to realize Brahman, or simple words, to realize God. The next question that comes is, suppose I don't want, what do I lose? You see, if someone says that I am quite happy to suffer, okay, go ahead. But a time will come, suffering becomes insufferable. And at that time you will be seeking, how can I get rid of this suffering? In fact, what is suffering, you know? Suffering is nothing but limitation. Suffering is nothing but limitation. Simplest example is, suppose the air is very polluted here and you are struggling to breathe. What is the problem? Limited oxygen. That's all. So how do you get rid of it? Open the windows, bring in, allow the air to flow more freely, like that. And you feel thirsty. What is thirst? Your water level has gone down. What is hunger? Your food level has gone down. What is tiredness? Your energy level has gone down. Remove these limitations and then you become happy. So what is happiness? Freedom is happiness. Have you ever thought in that angle? We think freedom is separate and happiness is something else. Actually, what is happiness? Freedom. The simplest example would be, suppose the sun is shining brightly and we have drawn all the curtains, have closed, and so it is dark and we are feeling the pinch of it. We want more light. What do you need to do? Do you need to bring in the light? Just draw the curtains. Remove the obstacles. So what are you doing? You are removing the limitations. And that is called happiness. Then you feel very happy. When you drink water, after you are thirsty, then you are removing limitation. And if that makes you are free from thirst. You are free from hunger. You are free from tiredness. If we understand this way, we are all struggling for freedom. The goal of human life is freedom. And in order to attain to this, Hinduism or Vedas have divided all human beings into four categories. Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya and Brahmana. So, they are not to be looked down. It is different stages of evolution. And within each human life, whether it is a Shudra or Vaishya or Kshatriya or Brahmana, again life is divided into four categories. What is the Samya, similarity between these two? Four types of people and four different stages of same life. What is the similarity? Evolution. Evolution. So, Shudra evolves into Vaishya. Vaishya evolves into Kshatriya. Kshatriya evolves into Brahmana. Let me also tell you, lest you might mistake my talk. This is not that at some point Shudra becomes suddenly a Vaishya. It is not to be understood. These Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, these are all now categories we imposed by birth. But actually, it is an evolution of what we call three gunas. Tamas to Rajas, Rajas to Sattva, and then go beyond the three qualities. Similarly, from a student life, we evolve into student life. What do? We learn. What do we do in married life? we experience, experiment, and expand ourselves. Actually, a brahmacharya student, he is one. When he gets married, he expands. His consciousness expands. Previously, he had only one head. So, how many headaches? One headache. Now, after marriage, how many heads he has?
Two
heads. So, how many headaches? Two headaches. And then children come. One child comes. Now, how many heads?
Three.
So, like that, no? Ultimately, he becomes a centipede. It's an evolution. I'm only joking. But the reality is, the person starts identity previously, I am this. Now, I am this as well as that. And then children identify. Usually, our expansion stops at that point. Only my family and myself and my family. That is bondage. Now, why don't you include your village? Why don't you include your town? Why don't you include your city? Why don't you include your country? Why don't you include the whole world? Etc. etc. This is the idea. You expand your consciousness, identity, until you achieve such a state, you say, Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam, a whole universe. That is the truth. That is the truth. But since we think that, oh, I am the only truth, my body is the only truth, my mind is the only truth, that's why we are very limited. So what is the evolution from Brahmacharya Ashrama to Grihastha Ashrama? This is only physiological extension. But then, why should we realize it? Then the third stage comes. What is the third stage? Vanaprastha. Vana here indicates that turning the mind inward. If you go to a lonely place, see what Sri Ramakrishna says, third commandment, Nirjanasthan, Vana, where there would be least external disturbance. That is the idea. So that you can concentrate more, you can focus more, you can meditate more, you can think deeply. That is the idea. But if you take an MP3 player and video player and your Amazon HD tablet even to a jungle, then you have everything, the whole samsara is there. Yeah. The idea is, do not depend. Another idea of being alone. What does it mean? It aids in concentration, in deep thinking. But another idea is, the lonely we are, the more independent we become. You know how much we are dependent. One day if the electricity goes up, you understand how much we are dependent. One day the internet access is off, then people go mad. Then now, you know, as time is going on, lots of phobias are developing. Phobias. You know what is phobia? Fear of something. You know, fear of grass, fear of dry leaf, fear of heights, fear of closed spaces and open spaces, fear of crowds, you name it, it is there. Fear of swamis. Yeah. So many parents, they are terribly frightened of swami. That's why limited access to the swami. Lest the children might turn out to be swamis. Yeah. They have fear. Now the latest phobia is mobile phobia. What is mobile phobia? You know, the fear of losing mobile phones. I'm not joking. The fear of losing mobile phone. What? How can I have life without my mobile phone? See, what an, we are, how much we have become dependent upon these things, because they do a lot of things, you know. And you can access everything through mobile phone. So we have become so much dependent upon it. They are good, use them. But do not be used by them. And they are using. So, freedom, this is what we seek. But we get caught. We say we want freedom, but we get caught. So, vanaprastha ashrama, what is it? To be alone. Alone means not to be lonely, not to feel lonely. We can be alone, but not lonely. So, what is the purpose? So that we become non-dependent upon anything. It's fine. Everything is fine. Finally, total independence, symbolized by renunciation. That is called sannyasa ashrama. All these ashramas, what is the similarity? Samya, gradual evolution means more freedom, and it also means more independence, not to depend upon anything else. Now, this whole idea of evolution, according to Vedanta, is to progress or to overcome the lower guna and progress into the higher guna. All the gunas are divided into three categories. What are they? Tamas, rajas and sattva. Now, 14th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita exclusively deals with the nature and the manifestation of these three gunas. That is why it is aptly entitled as Gunatraya Vibhaga Yogo Nama Chaturdasho Adhyayaha. Gunatraya Vibhaga Yoga. And based upon this idea, the sambandha, the relationship between the 14th and the 15th chapter. 15th chapter is called Purushottama Yoga. Uttama Purusha. Purushottama means Uttama Purusha. There are three entities in our experience. Our life is a triangle. I and the world and God. I, the world and God. Where all these three lose their angularities and become one, that is called Uttama Purusha, Kshara and Akshara. Yasmat Kshara-matitoham Aksharadapicha Uttama Ato Vedecha Pradhitaha Purushottamaha. So, Kshara means that which is the most transient, ephemeral. Akshara means that which is less transient. But comprising these two, supporting these two, is the highest reality called Uttama Purusha. That has been delineated. And that is very important for us to understand the relationship between the 15th chapter and the 17th chapter. What is the 15th essence of the 15th chapter? We are all Purushottamas. That is a wrong expression, not to Purushottamas. We are Purushottama, because only one Purusha is there, not so many Purushas. Only one Purusha, Purushottama. That is the goal we have to attain, to realize that I am the Purushottama. Thereby we don't lose anything, but we gain everything. So this is Purushottama, Uttama Purusha. So what is the problem? Why don't we realize it? And the 15th chapter also, you know, it gives one of the most rational, cogent, scientific explanation of the divinity of the soul. Very briefly, who took 14th chapter? Who explained 14th chapter? So I hope you remember it. But what is most important is, let me give you an example so that we can proceed, because this is related to our, each topic is related. We are talking about evolution. What is the goal of evolution? Whenever we use the word evolution, we have to understand other words. We can never understand the meaning of a particular word unless we also understand something related to it. Can you understand what is light unless you understand what is darkness? Can you understand what is good unless there is also evil? It looks, we always question why there is so much evil. Why don't you question why there is so much of good? How do you know it is evil? Because there is good. And how do you know that there is good? Only if there is evil. It goes together. If you remove one, you can't understand the other at all. So, with this idea, let us summarize the 15th chapter. Take any object in this world, and if you analyze that object, you understand there would be three causes. Take a simple example. Here is a computer. Here is a chair. Let me give a better idea. Here is a chair. So how did this object called chair happen to be? Simply, it doesn't fall from the sky. To be that chair, it must have three causes. What are those three causes? A material cause, an instrumental cause, and then an intelligent or efficient cause. So, what is the material cause of the chair? What is the instrumental cause? The saw, the chisel, the hammer, etc. The instrument with which this object has been made. And there must be an intelligent agent to make a plan. Out of this wood, I want to fashion a chair, a table, whatever it is. Now, if you see a table, and it's a nice table, and you like it, and you know that there must be three causes, and you have a desire, so let me congratulate the intelligent cause. Who is the intelligent cause? Carpenter. So you may not be able to find him. He might have gone to India on leave, or he must have gone to the other world too, to visit his great grandfather or whatever it is. Yeah, he will come back again. According to Hinduism, he will come back. Yeah. By the time he comes back, he will change his name, form, everything. He comes entirely with a new fashionable dress, and you can't recognize him. So you may not be able to find the intelligent cause. So you want to see the instrumental cause, you know, the planer, the chisel, the hammer, etc. So they might have become rusted, or they might have been thrown away. How do you decide? You may not be able to see them. But if you want to see the material cause, where will the material cause go? Where will the wood go in this instance? When you are looking at the chair or table, you are looking at the material cause. There is no way the material cause can disappear. Because if the wood disappears, what happens to the chair? Chair also disappears. What is the point we are deriving from this understanding? What is the point? That is to say, you can never separate an object from its material cause. Keep this in mind. Take this analysis in the next step. So, this whole universe is an object. Whatever we experience is an object. The whole universe, Jagat, is an object. So, this Jagat, like any other object, the chair is there now, and after some time, the chair will not be there. Any object, this is the nature, at some point of time, it was not there. Later on, in time, it comes. And then in time, it goes back to its original nature. Before the universe was there, who was there?
Brahman.
Brahman. How do you know Brahman is there? Because the material cause, wood, you can never make the wood, the chair may disappear, but the wood will never disappear. The wood will always be there. Matter will always be there. What is the second law of thermodynamics? Matter, energy cannot be neither created nor destroyed. You can alter it. And only a small bit of it. This is what science is telling. So similarly, the material cause cannot be destroyed, cannot be created, but it can be altered. So what is the material cause of this Jagat? There must be. So that is called God or Brahman, reality, truth, whatever name you give. Now, we also mentioned the other two causes. So besides God, is there any instrumental cause? So he must be the instrumental cause. And besides God, is there any efficient cause or intelligent cause? So God is the intelligent cause, God is the instrumental cause, and God is the material cause. Now, let us derive a simple point from this discussion. When you want to see the material cause of the chair, where do you need to go? When you are looking at the chair, what are you looking at? If the material cause only is appearing in the shape of the chair, table, etc. Is it not? So, who is the material cause of this Jagat? So, if you want to see God, where do you need to go? Where do you need to go? When you are looking at the world, what are you looking at? God only. Do you get the point? Because He is the material cause, so you don't need to go. Where else will you go? That is why in the Vishnu Sahasranama, what is the first name of Vishnu?
Vishwam.
After that only comes Vishnu. Mm-hmm. First comes Vishwam. Yes, Vishwam is another name for God. What is the name of the wood? Chair. What is the name of the wood? Table. What is the name of the wood? Door. Yeah. So, what is the point? 15th chapter, Purushottama Yoga, what it tells is, Urdhva Moolam Athashakam Ashvattham Rahuravyayam. What it is telling is, the root of this whole universe, where is it? Above. Urdhva. Above means what? Material cause of this universe is God. This universe is coming from God. There is no choice because besides God, there is nobody else. So it can come only from God. What is the law we said? An apple seed comes from apple tree. And it again manifests itself as apple tree. If you remember that, then since we have come from God, we are also going back to God. So the process of the apple tree becoming apple seed is called involution, and the process of the seed, apple seed, manifesting as apple tree is called evolution. Now you understand? If you, the moment you use the word evolution, you have to use the word involution. Involution means you came from somewhere. Evolution means you are going back. So you are not doing, becoming something else. What are you doing? You are going, merely going. You came out of your home and you are going back to your own home. Manachalo nija niketane. Iti. Very simple analysis. How to go? Evolution. What is evolution? Again, I mentioned the point. Evolution of the gunas. We manifest more from less tamas and more of rajas, and less rajas and more of sattva, until we get out of. So, what do these gunas? How do they help us? You know, catapult? Catapult? What do you do? There would be a stone there. Put a stone. What did David kill? Goliath. What did he kill? Yeah. So like that, these three gunas, they act as a catapult for the soul to attain to its. So, tamas pushes us, throws us into rajas, into the catapult called rajas. And rajas pushes in us into the catapult called sattva. And sattva ultimately throws us out. So, what is the goal of this whole universe? This whole universe is made up of three gunas. The whole jagat is made up of three gunas. So what is the goal of this? To throw the soul out and say, you rogue, you don't belong to me, you belong to somebody else, get the hell out of my house. If you cooperate with it, and you know, he will throw you very gently. If you don't cooperate, he will kick you with great force. Yeah. That is what happens. The body, the mind, etc. are there always to push us from born in 1900. Memorial. And no, dash. 1970. Dash. 1900 to 1970. Dash. This is human life. Ultimately, this is what they say, you know. As I joke, you know, we are all 3G people. 3G people, you know. These Americans, they discovered 3G only right now. And Hindus have been working on 4G, see, ever since their birth. 3G. What is 3G? Growing, graying, and going. Human life, story of human life. Growing, graying. Even if you color your hair also, it won't stop going final. What is 4G? 4G. Hindus always work with 4G. You must know that. Jante hain? Guru, Gita, Ganga, Gayatri. Remember, 4Gs. Every Hindu, if he forgets 4G, he is a forger. Guru, Gita, Ganga, Gayatri. So, evolution means to go back to our home. That's what it means. So, how do we effect that process? From tamas to rajas, from rajas to sattva, and go beyond the three gunas. So, in the 16th chapter, human beings, all human beings are divided roughly into two categories. What are they? Daiva and Asura. Divine as well as demonic. Now that is also an evolution. We are a mixture of divine and demonic. When we are utterly selfish, we are demonic. And when we are a little less selfish, to that extent we are divine. You know, as children, when you see a child, we always feel very loving. It is only senseless people, mad people, that they murder and do things to children. But usually, universal phenomena, any child, if some child is in a danger, in a street, do you think that he is not my child? Why should I go and do this? Do you think what would be your natural instinct? To just go and help that child, is it not? So, this process is there, always within us. We are always a mixture of good and evil. Only a person who has realized God, he is all good. Accepting that, we are all different percentages. Sometimes the percentage of divinity and demonic is 50-50. Like a horse and a rabbit. Does it make any meaning? Yes, sir. Swami Yatishwamiji used to tell a story, you know. During Second World War in UK, rabbit meat was very, very scarce. So one man was going, walking in the street. There was a restaurant. And suddenly he saw, rabbit meat served here. So he went in, ordered a plate, started eating. But he was not getting rabbit taste at all. So he called the manager and said, do you really serve rabbit here? He said, yes, sir. I don't get it. So, sir, you know, rabbits are very scarce because all the meat is being eaten up. So, we have to mix a little bit other meat. What did you mix? I said, horse meat. What is the proportion? He said, 50-50. What do you mean by 50-50? One horse versus one horse. What is the proportion of divinity and so gradually everyone, from a child to the old man, we are all struggling to manifest. Why do I say we are struggling? It looks as though most people are selfish, utterly cruel. No. Because every one of us want happiness. Happiness means freedom. And freedom means evolution of the gunas. What is the connection? Connection is tamo guna is less freedom. Rajo guna is much more freedom. And sattva guna is even more freedom. 100% freedom we get only when we get out of the bondage of these three gunas. That's why Sri Ramakrishna illustrates it so beautifully through the story of the three robbers. I hope you remember the three robbers in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. For those who do not know, a rich man was traveling. He had to travel through a forest. So three robbers fell upon him. And they robbed him of all his wealth. And they bound him. And one fellow said, what is the use of keeping this fellow alive? He might go and report to the police. So let us finish him off. The other fellow said, there is no need. We have taken what we want. Let us keep him bound and let us go away. Maybe he will die and some animal might come and kill him, etc. Or he will die of hunger and thirst, etc. So they all went away. Shortly after that, one robber came back and said, my good man, I can't see you suffering so much. Anyway, we have taken what we wanted. So there is no meaning in keeping you in this. I will release you and then I will guide you back to your village. He took him to the edge of the forest and said, there is your home, you go. This man was so grateful. Oh, he said, you have saved my life and I am so grateful to you. Why don't you come to our house? I would like to honor you. He said, no, I am still a robber. The police will arrest me. I cannot come to you outside this forest. So I have shown you the way. This was the story. So what is the meaning? The robber who said, let us kill him, is representative of Tamoguna. The robber who said, what is the point of, there is no need to kill him, let us bind him, and he is representative of Rajoguna. But the robber who was kind, and he came and released him, and then he took him safely out of danger, he is representative of Sattvaguna. So always the fight between this divine qualities and demonic qualities. So people are divided into gods and demons. This is a ever recurring theme in Hindu mythology. You know, what is your Mahabharata? The war between, battle between the good and the evil. What is the war between the Ramayana? War between the good and the evil. The gods and the demons. Or in Upanishads you get always this, especially Keno Upanishad, you know. There was this war and the gods won and they felt proud. We have won the war. We are great. And then one strange being appears, an Yaksha. And then he frightened everybody. Anyway, what is the point of this story? That it always this, there is this fight between the good and the evil. Not only in the external world. Even today we see that in the external world. But it is going on, this war, within the soul of every being, in the mind of every being. One part of our personality says, it is nice to get up early in the morning, to meditate upon God, and to do all those things. One part of our personality is, it is not so good to marry. But the other part is, you stupid fellow, you can remain a bachelor after, say, 70 years old, when you are 70 years old. Now you enjoy the, look, see the fun. Enjoy the fun. Then this fight is going on. And we just, since you tell me so, since you say so, okay, I will give in. Let us taste the fun. So this fight is going on. But slowly, inevitably, we are all being pushed by the stream of time to evolve. Biologically, a creature of much simpler complexity. Then more and more complexity of the brain means the consciousness was able to express itself more and more and more. That's called intelligence. Evolution of the more and more intelligence. The capacity to understand. It is called evolution of the consciousness. So this is what is happening biologically. Then after some time, we have to turn inward, which is called moral evolution. Then finally comes spiritual evolution. So this has been delineated so beautifully in the 16th chapter, that there is always a fight. What is it? Between the stabilizing forces, the dynamic and the static. And the static forces says, enough is enough, let us sit down. But the dynamic forces tell that no, I will not allow you to be like this. You have to grow, you have to understand more, you have to remember more, you have to enjoy more, you must have more freedom. Somehow it is inbuilt. And this process of evolution cannot be stopped. It is impossible to stop it. So, ultimately, it is this which is pushing biological evolution, which is pushing moral evolution, and which is also pushing the spiritual evolution. It cannot be stopped, but you have a choice of either slowing it down or fastening it. If you understand the scriptures and if you follow with willpower, then you are fastening the process. Otherwise, we learn our lessons. Life teaches us our lessons in the form of, behaviorist therapy. Behaviorist therapy. Do you know what is behaviorist therapy? So, if you want to train a dog, how do you train a horse, a dog? How do you train? So, through reward and punishment. So, nature also has evolved. It is the biggest theory, what is called behaviorist psychologist. What does it do? When you do good karma, it rewards us. When we do evil karma, it punishes. Its purpose is not to punish or reward. Its ultimate purpose is to help us evolve towards a higher goal. So here, I would like to clarify something. So many people have some kind of misnomer. And that misnomer is spiritual life is a very hard life, very difficult life, an irrational life. You think that it is only for old age when nothing else to be done. You say Vedanti. Well, all the dantas have fallen down. That is the time. Yeah, to Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, old Musaltanulo, this is what we think. But if you understand what is spiritual life, you become more intelligent. Who doesn't want to become more intelligent? What is spiritual life? You become more happy. What is it? What is spiritual life? You become more creative. In three words, we can that is spirituality. You grow in what is called goodness. You grow in wisdom. And you grow also in happiness. Sat, Chit and Ananda. After all, who doesn't want to be happy? Even a most wicked person also wants only happiness. And the only way we can attain happiness is by being spiritual. So what is happiness? It is a state of mind where we put the least obstruction to the light of the Atman, Atma Jyoti, has to come out. But unable to understand it, we think an object gives us happiness. Object doesn't give us happiness. Object can give us happiness. Object is not happiness. It depends upon how we look upon it. The same object can give us happiness. The same object also can give us unhappiness. It is a beautiful story told by one of our Swamis. Very nice story. There was a fellow, this applies especially to India. There was a fellow who was highly corrupt. He was accumulating terrible amount of black money. His words are very peculiar. Black money is not black. Neither it is white. Money is money. Black money means... So you cannot bring it out. So this fellow was accumulating and accumulating and accumulating. And he was hiding it in one secret, so-called, he thought secret place of, in his house. So one night, he accumulated quite a lot. One night, robbers came. And at one point, they had taken away all that money. So many years of accumulation. Om Phat. Swaha. Gone. Swaha. Gone. You can imagine that fellow's mental condition at that time. Profoundly, he almost felt like committing suicide. And you see, the government was keeping an eye upon him. They were spying him. And that night, the income tax department decided to write. Soon after the robbers have taken away everything, this fellow came in and swooped, fell down. They searched the whole house from top to bottom. They could not get one single penny because how happy this fellow was. Now you see, this is profoundly sad after the, soon after the robbers went away. Now as soon as these inspectors came, income tax inspectors, his face was blooming like the Noira Brahma. Why? Because he knows that they are not able to, they are not going to catch hold of him. Otherwise they could put him in the jail, they could punish him. Not only they take away the money, but he is also... So now the robbers have only taken away the money, but these fellows cannot prove anything. Yeah. See, the same object also can give us profound unhappiness, misery. The same object also can give us profound happiness depending upon the circumstances. This is a play of sukha dukkha in our life. So this battle is going on, but slowly nature, prakriti, what is its function? To take us to the evolutionary state, to push us towards God. That is why sukha and dukkha are two, what is called behavior shaping actions. Nature is the greatest behaviorist. This is what in Hinduism we call karma siddhanta. So the 16th chapter deals with the expressions of these qualities, sattva and rajas and tamas. So in the form of divine qualities as well as, so it starts abhayam sattvasam sutti, jnana yoga devasthiti, dhanan damasya ignasya, swadhyaya tapa arjamam, tejakshamam sutti shocham adroho natimanita, bhavanti sampadam daivim abhijatasya. So this has been beautifully linear. Then comes 17th chapter. What is 17, what is the title of this 17th chapter? Shraddha Traya Vibhaga Yoga. It's a yoga. Every chapter in the Gita is called yoga. Why? Because every chapter is trying to help us join God. Every chapter. Sankhya Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, Purushottama Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, Unatraya Yoga, giving us the clues. This is how you will progress towards God in spiritual life. Now, this chapter is very, very important. According to me, it's one of the most important chapters. Now, can we look at any human being? And we encounter hundreds of human beings in our lives. No two human beings are ever alike. No two animals are ever alike. No two plants are ever alike. No two objects are ever alike. According to scientists, even not even two snowdrops are ever alike. You can distinguish, if you magnify them enough, there will be difference. Number one, this is how you know, is your thumb. When your non-US citizens come into this, you have to show your thumb to them. Show your, request you show your thumb. What are they doing? They want to know whether we are dangerous, say, terrorists or criminals or any record is there, etc., etc. What is the point? No two thumb pictures are alike. Everybody's, even two thumbs are not alike. There will be certain differences. But even there also they are finding some important similarities. Let's say nowadays they are seeing the retina display. detailed. The point is, we see difference everywhere. What is it that makes the difference? What is it that makes the difference? You know, a new prince is born in UK. You know that? See, what did he do? He's a baby, just born a month back or so. And he's born in a royal family. If he sneezes, there will be 100 doctors running around. You sneeze and you sneeze. Even nearby people also run away. Why this difference? What is it that makes a difference? Karma phala. The results are actions. And what is it that makes the difference in actions? What is the root cause of our knowledge? Our knowledge are the results. We are the result of our past karma. Our past karma is done because of, why does a thief do thieving? Because of his knowledge. Why does a good man help others? Because of his knowledge. So knowledge is the root cause of our actions. Our desires are the root cause of our actions. Desires are the root cause of our knowledge. Do you understand that point? If you don't have information about an object, you can never desire it. First you must have an information. Yes, there is a new car. Otherwise, you will not come. How did you come here? You get an information. There is going to be a retreat. A Swami is going to come. And after that you decide whether you want it or not. What is the difference between one person's knowledge and the other person's knowledge? Gunas. Gunas. It is the gunas. One guna obscures the knowledge. Another guna reveals more of the knowledge. So tamo guna, it brings misunderstanding. It is why that also we have discussed it. What does this tamo guna do? So it covers up the right knowledge and leads us into misinformation, wrong information, wrong interpretation. Information being same, the interpretation differs according to our. So Sri Ramakrishna gives this beautiful example. A night, a light is burning. So what is a Brahmana devotee doing? He is studying Bhagavatam under the same light. What is a thief doing? He is trying to forge a check. Same light, but two different uses. So same knowledge, but two different uses. What is it that makes this difference? Gunas. So the gunas are so much very important. We are nothing but embodiment of these three gunas. Those who are very lazy and all, they don't think, and they go on making lot of mistakes and yet do not learn, and they are overpowered by tamo guna. And those who are more enlightened, more intelligent, more correct understanding, then which guna is ruling them? Rajo guna. Those whose understanding is absolutely crystal clear. This is it. This is right. This is wrong. This is good. This is evil. This leads to happiness. This doesn't lead to happiness. So these are the gunas. In the 14th chapter, Gunatraya Vibhava Yoga, what was explained is the nature and manifestation of the gunas. In the 17th chapter, how it applies to our day-to-day life, our way of looking at things, our way of doing things, our way of eating, performing pujas, yagnas, or studying scriptures. Every aspect of our life, how these gunas affect our life. That is what the 17th chapter, Shraddha Traya Vibhaga Yoga. Shraddha. Now, why do we use the word Shraddha? Traya means three. How this Shraddha manifests, same Shraddha, but manifests in three forms. Traya Vibhaga Yoga. Three forms means what? Shraddha that manifests through three windows. What are those three windows? Tamas, Rajas and same light, three windows. One is a dark glass, another is semi-dark glass, another is clear glass, in which the light will be manifesting more, streaming more. This is practically illustrating that how we differ in our habits of eating, studying, talking with others and performing puja in courage, in understanding, in dhriti, buddhi, dhriti, sukha, ahara, etc., etc. Where these three gunas, practical examples the man gives. Shraddha, what does the word Shraddha mean? Don't ever mistake it with Shraddha. Shraddha is totally a funeral ceremony. Otherwise you will make Shraddha of Shraddha, Shraddha. Shraddha and Shraddha. Shraddha, what is Shraddha? This Shankaracharya, in his great work Viveka Chudamani, defines certain of these, what is called Sadhana Chatushtaya Sampatti, what is Viveka, Vairagya, and etc. In that Shraddha defines. Guru, Shastra, Vakyeshu, Satya, Buddhi, Avadharana. That something is absolutely true. What the scriptures say, what the Guru says. And what does the Guru say? The Guru is only proves the scriptures. He is nothing but simpler, clearer explanation of the scriptural truths is what you call. Remember? GPS. GPS. Without GPS, you will be lost in the wilderness of Cedar Rapids. Supposing there is somebody, he wants to come here. You know, all these Bhulbulaya lanes. Bhulbulaya, you know, this Bhulbulaya? Lucknow. There is a huge building called Bhulbulaya. The guides will take you. It's just 2 minutes inside. And then he says that you now wander. And you see, if you don't come out after 2 hours, I will come and take you out. If you don't pay money. Before he will take money. Only if you refuse to give money, he will take you inside. He says, please come. If you are a poor man, please come, I will take you inside. He says, now you enjoy. But there are rooms exactly same dimensions with four doors. You know, like honeycomb, like that, you know. That you think that you are going, after entering into 2-3 rooms, now you are lost. Because every room looks exactly the same. You become what is called professors. There was a professor who bought a ticket to go somewhere. So he went to the airport, entered in that revolving door. Now he forgot whether he should go inside or go outside. He went on roaming. He will be roaming. It's called Bhulbulaya. So, this understanding, you know, is a Shraddha. The Guru is there to clarify. That is why this Guru, who is the real Guru? Only God. The Guru is not a human being. Satchidananda alone is the Guru. When we say Guru is Brahma, don't equate him with a human being. Human being, that human being is an instrument through which God is. And what is that? Knowledge. What is a scripture? Knowledge. What is a guru? Knowledge. So, knowledge is another name for God. Knowledge is jnana. That is why we call it sat, chit, and chit means what? Knowledge. Chit means knowledge. Another name for God is knowledge. That's why Brahma vit. Brahma eva bhavati. Noira Brahman becomes Brahma. So, Shraddha means 100% faith that this is true. How do we know a person has Shraddha or not? A simple illustration. What is the difference between belief and Shraddha? Belief doesn't bring any transformation. That means no reaction will be there. Belief. Whereas Shraddha, instantaneous transformation will be there. For, as an example, if you think that there is something is ticking and you think it is a time bomb, you don't believe it is a time bomb, you have information, you don't believe in it, so what happens? You don't respond. You simply stay there, stay put. But a person who knows this is time bomb, what does he do? Immediately he will run away. So, if we know something, this is true, it must bring instantaneous reaction, somewhere or the other. Is what Sri Ramakrishna illustrates in the Gospel. If a thief comes to know, in the next room, there is invaluable treasure, do you think he will be able to sleep? Yeah. So, Shraddha means that which transforms us alone is Shraddha. And that which is only a mere knowledge, that is not Shraddha at all. That's why you read the scripture. What does the scripture say? God exists. Does it bring any transformation in us? If it doesn't bring, then we don't have Shraddha towards it. So, Shraddha means absolute faith, this is the truth. So, what is this Shraddha? We wish to have this Shraddha. But we are incapable of having the Shraddha because we are the victims of three gunas. The gunas does not allow, each guna doesn't allow us to access that Shraddha. It controls the Shraddha. It hides the Shraddha. It doesn't allow it Shraddha to manifest itself. So, how do we, what is the difference between one human being and another human being? Shraddha. A person who has more happiness, a person who has more knowledge, a person who has more wisdom, and a person who is more selfless, that person is possessed by which guna? Sattva guna. Another person is possessed of less amount of this sattva, which is called rajoguna. And another person is complete, more or less covered with darkness. That person is called tamasic person. Now, what we should not misunderstand, a tamasic person is not one who is sleeping. A sleeping person is not a tamasic person. Tamoguna is sattva guna when a person wants to sleep. Yeah. If you have got rajoguna, when you wish to sleep, then it is real tamoguna. During sleeping time, what is the sattva guna? Tamoguna. So every guna is great in its own place. For that particular action, that is when you want to do something very vigorously, then rajoguna should be there. When you want to meditate, etc., sattva guna should be there. Each guna is great in its own place. So, giving several life's activities, Lord Krishna, this describes the different manifestations of these three gunas. And by that we can judge ourselves, what is called self-analysis. Am I endowed with sattva, sattvic shraddha, or rajasic shraddha, or tamasic shraddha? So, having known that, this is only information, then we should try. If I am to get rid of, okay. So, I am first, what is the first stage of cure?
Understand.
What is the first stage? If you go to a doctor, what does he do? First thing is diagnose the disease. He studies, he examines, he tests and finds. What is the second stage? He prescribes the correct medicine for that for getting rid of those particular symptoms. What is the third stage? That has to be done by whom? By us. Simply, I know, I heard your reply. By you. This has to be done by each one of us. That is where we fail. We have to understand, then we have to make a plan, and we have to implement that plan. So, this whole chapter is meant for this purpose. So, we will discuss from two, how many sessions we have?
Four
more sessions. We will complete. It's not a big chapter. Once we get the idea, all this introduction is for two purposes. No chapter of the Bhagavad Gita is isolated or independent. There is a logical connection between one and the other chapter very nicely. The second purpose is called Yoga Shastra. Iti Bhagavad Gita-su Upanishad-su Brahma Vidyaya Yoga Shastre. Here yoga means what? No, practical Vedanta. It is practical. Every chapter is practical. It has to be put into practice. And the clear indications are given. This is how you practice. So, we will take it up. It is a most enchanting, enlightening chapter according to me. And at the same time, it is also not a very pleasant chapter. Because at the end we find ourselves certified as and that is not the, we all want to be certified as Param Satvika people. But no. You see, there is no shame. Yeah. So we have to. When does madness get cured? When a person accepts that I am mad, then only there is a chance for him. So, this is most enlightening chapter. We will discuss it. Actually, if we can give hundreds of illustrations, but I won't give so many illustrations, but I will try to give some of Thakur's teachings at the same time, incidents as far as possible. But at the same time, we also have to, we have a sense, you know. Swami never completes anything he says. And there is nothing called complete. If you understand properly, that is the more than enough. There is no completing anything. Only when we reach God, everything becomes complete. Yeah. But psychological satisfaction. We have studied 17, completed book, Pode Felici. Bangati Bura, Pode Felici. Felici mane? Through tail. Pode Felici. That's what we find, you know. Pode Felici. In Bangla, Bengali language. Poda mane? I have fallen down. We have to understand. Even if you understand correctly this much, that much is the benefit. Om Vasudeva Sutam Devam Kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki Paramanandam Krishnam Vande Jagat. So before coming it would be nice if you can just read the simple meaning of this chapter. Then understanding becomes much more easier, you know. So it will be always good, if not the previous chapter, at least this chapter, simple meaning, and we can also learn to chant. You know, there is a way of chanting it, very simple way. Gita chanting, you all know. Vasudeva sutam devam kamsa chanuramardhanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagatpuram dharma kshetre kuru kshetre samaveta yuyutsava mamakah pandavascheiva kima kurvata sanjaya. This is the tune, very simple tune. So we will chant some of the shlokas and then we will discuss appropriately. So I will try to summarize it from tomorrow. Okay, those who are preparing food, you can go. And rest of you stay here until we are called. Yeah. Otherwise, you know, two things.